What's up, guys? This is Jacques. Welcome back to Unpopular. I know this episode was supposed to drop a few days ago as like a bonus or something, but I just couldn't get it together in time. I don't know what to say. It actually, to be fair, was not my fault. We're in lockdown again here in Sydney, so my extremely social housemate, who is usually out like all the time until all hours of the night, is actually home all the time, and I couldn't get in the vibe to record. Like, I just really need to go there when I record and let loose and be psycho and just, you know, lose my shit and act like a lunatic. And when there's people around, I can't do it. And he's out now, which I'm surprised it took him so long to get out. I didn't even think he was going to follow any lockdown protocol. So each night I'm like waiting for him to go out with his friends, and he was like actually at home. I'm like, what? I follow the protocol, by the way, so don't fucking leave me some comment like thinking that I'm not. We're going to talk about Ebony today, finally, because that's what everyone wants to hear me talk about. I've had so many messages about Ebony. And I'm going to talk a little Bachelor stuff and Rachel Lindsay, and I want to talk about the View shakeup, even though I hate the View, but I have some thoughts on it. And also this stupid Joe Rogan feature in the New York Times that was just totally embarrassing. Also, I just recorded with Ryan Bailey for his podcast, So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. I love his show. He's just really funny and professional, and he's really fun to record with. Obviously, I've had him on here before, and I will have him back again sometime. That will be out Tuesday, US time. And yeah, I just really enjoy recording with Ryan, and we talked about a bunch of stuff. Before I get into that, shout out to Below Deck Mediterranean. It is back for season 6. I watched the premiere the other day. It's so good. I'm just so thankful to have like new Below Deck episodes back so soon after Sailing Yacht. I love Below Deck now. You know that I just like am a recent convert to Below Deck, and now I can't even imagine my life without it. Like, it just feels like this is how things are supposed to be. Like, a new Below Deck, just everything's right in the world. I love it. It's like comfort food for me as far as TV. Like, I don't know. I just love it. It's so fucking good. If you haven't got into Below Deck yet, literally, you can just start from this season. Like, you don't have to have seen anything beforehand. Just jump in. You know, I only just got into it recently, and just amazing. And fucking Captain's, I love hating on Captain Sandy. It's so fun. She's such a micromanaging, just alpha nitpicking nightmare, but it's like, it's just so funny. I just love getting annoyed by her on that first episode when she brought up about people bringing drugs on board as like a passive aggressive dig at Hannah. I was like, you bitch, like yelling at the TV. Just love it. I also watched Fear Street 1994 on Netflix. I was the biggest fan of Fear Street books when I was a kid, like obsessed. I read so many of them. I liked Goosebumps as well, but I was kind of an advanced reader, and I grew out of Goosebumps like really, really quick. So I was reading Fear Street at like 6 or 7, and that was just my like favorite thing ever. I just always loved horror movies as a kid. As for the movie, yeah, I was very excited for it. Like, it was okay. I thought it would be aimed more at my demographic since I grew up on R.L. Stine, and, you know, everyone that's my age did, but I feel like it was made more for the Riverdale and Stranger Things crowd. Like, it showed promise at the start because they had this really clever reveal about the main character, and then there was this big class divide between the two towns. Had like the poor town and the rich town, and I thought they were going to do something more with that and explore that a bit more, but like past half an hour, the whole thing was just like pretty shallow. Like, the beginning was good. It was like nostalgic and fun, and they had a lot of like really great music from that era, like Garbage and Korn and Radiohead, and people were using AOL Messenger. You know, Garbage, the first Garbage album, I think, is the first album I ever bought. I was really young. Like, I was probably like 8 years old or something, 7 years old when it came out, and I bought it on cassette. And yeah, hearing that was just really fun, but the rest of the movie was just like really just shallow and generic. Like, there was no storyline. It was very repetitive. The books at least always had a whodunit mystery element to them, so there'd always be like a twist ending, but this didn't have any of that. It was literally just one long, very implausible chase scene. So I don't know. It was like funny though. I was surprised how funny it was actually. I laughed at most of the jokes. Usually I would find that stuff like just cringy and lame, but I thought it was well written. And I don't know, maybe I'm just not the demo for it. Like people that watch CW shows and stuff might think it's like the best thing ever. For me, it was okay. I'll probably watch the next installment, but you know, it wasn't what I wanted it to be, but I didn't hate it. So that's always nice. Okay, so I just read this Joe Rogan piece in the New York Times. It was so petty and bitchy. Like, it wasn't even some damning takedown like I was expecting from the New York Times, because usually when they report on stuff like this, it's just super over the top. But it was just, like, bitchy. Like, it was really passive-aggressive and condescending. Like, I was trying to figure out if the writer was gay or just a snobby dork. And I looked him up, and he's not good looking enough. I mean, I'm not saying he's ugly. It's just, he's not good looking enough to be gay. Like, gay people don't look like that. So he's just some bitchy dork. And you know what, guys? There were actually some real bombshells in this article. Like, Joe Rogan used to be surly and argumentative when he was a young comedian, but now he's, like, chilled out because he smokes weed and he's married with kids. Guys, did you know this? Did you know that comedians in Hollywood in their 20s and 30s are, like, testy and kind of miserable? My God, it was, what a bombshell. Couldn't believe it. You know, it's almost like they channel their angst and frustration into their comedy, and that's what makes them funny and entertaining in the first place. Thank you, New York Times, for this incredible revelation. The rest of the article just kind of like cherry picked a few controversial things that, you know, Rogan has said over his 10 years or so that he's had the podcast. And then they did some other bitchy things. Like they would try to make some of his progressive guests like Bernie Sanders look bad. Like they brought up some vaguely transphobic comment that Rogan made years ago about not wanting transgender women competing against, you know, biological women in sport or whatever. So they found the worst quote on that from years ago. And then they're like, and some people were concerned that Bernie Sanders went on, you know, given his comments, his transphobic comments, it's like, oh, try again. Like, it's so see-through what they do. It's so fucking transparent with how their guilt by association bullshit. Just, but overall, like, the article, it was just, like, a fucking big non-factor. Like, there was really nothing in there except Rogan was, like, kind of shitty back in the day, which I don't, like, I mean, I believe, of course he was. Like, he's a comedian. They're all fucking shitty. You could do a profile on, like, every comedian, especially male comedians around Joe's age and of that era, and it'll be like, yeah, they were a jerk. And, you know, he's 53 now. I barely even seen him angry on his podcast throughout all the years that I've, like, listened and watched on and off. Like, he's very chill. Whatever self-development, like, bro shit that Rogan has been doing on himself has definitely worked. You know, it's just funny, like, what these elite jack-offs at the New York Times don't get about Rogan and his podcast is that most people are just casual listeners who dip in and out depending on whether he has a good guest or not. Like, that's how I've always consumed it. Like, sometimes I'll go, like, weeks or months without even going near his show, and then I'll see that he has an interesting guest, and I'll dip in, and literally every single person that I know that listens to Joe Rogan, which is a lot, male and female, they're all the same. It's just like, okay, that guest looks interesting. I'll have a listen. Like, it's not that fucking deep. Like, these people literally think that, like, the tens of millions of people that listen to Joe Rogan are these, like, brain dead sheep that believe every single thing he says, and then they'll find, like, the worst guest that Rogan has ever had, and then they think that you believe everything that that guest said. Like, it's so fucking condescending and insulting. Like, yeah, Joe Rogan says stupid shit sometimes, and sometimes he has a bad guest. Like, we know. Like, we're not fucking stupid. Not that long ago, actually, I, like, casually referenced something from Rogan's show and to, like, a friend, and the friend was like, his show is goop for men. Like, as if I'm this fucking dumbass that just buys into every conspiracy theory that's ever been spouted on the podcast, that I buy every single product that Rogan recommends. Like, just, I just can't with the fucking condescending bullshit from these people. Like, I've been meaning actually to listen to the latest Rogan episode because Quentin Tarantino's on, and I like Quentin's movies. Like, is that okay? Or am I being brainwashed with misinformation? Like, am I going to listen to Tarantino and become an anti-vaxxer now because it was on Joe Rogan? Like, can I please listen to Tarantino talk about Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown without the New York Times readers wagging their fucking fingers at me? Like, fuck off. I'm really sorry that I Googled mushroom coffee after listening to Joe Rogan. Like, I would actually prefer not drinking cheap processed shit out of a fucking tin or going to Starbucks and ordering a double frappuccino with caramel and strawberry shortcake toppings and ice cream and three pumps of foam with seven shots of vanilla and choc mocha drizzle and whatever other shit you Americans put in your fucking... You're not meant to have all of that in a coffee, by the way. It's supposed to be like fucking coffee and milk and like ice for an ice latte. None of that other shit. But you know what? I guess I should just drink that and become a fat fucking pig with my teeth rotting out of my fucking skull because some douchebag at the New York Times is going to write an op-ed about how the Capitol rioters were hopped up on Four Sigmatic because they heard it on Joe Rogan. Like, shut up. It's so annoying. I'm so over this condescending, like, looking down on anyone that listens to one fucking episode of the Joe Rogan Experience. It's not that fucking deep. Like, there's so many episodes of that show. He does 3-hour podcasts, like, 4 or 5 times a week. Like, people dip in and out. Like, it's not that fucking serious. It's just bullshit. It's like... Do you think the New York Times doesn't publish bullshit or omit, like, important things? Like, they didn't even cover... They had this recent revelation in the Julian Assange case, like, which is literally, like, one of the biggest press freedom cases ever. The so-called paper of record, New York Times, didn't even cover it, which, whatever, it's fine. They don't have to, but... They're fucking dumbass readers and look down on people. You know, they want to feel intellectually superior to someone who watched fucking Macaulay Culkin on the Joe Rogan show. And you guys read a bunch of bullshit in the New York Times too. Like, shut up. Every fucking major platform is going to have some, like, misinformation and publish some bad things, including the New York Times, Joe Rogan, fucking MSNBC, Tucker Carlson, like, all of them. They're all bullshit. Anyway, shout out to the New Yorker, not the New York Times, that just dropped a great investigative piece on Free Britney. Ronan Farrow did it. He really comes out with some good articles, seriously. I feel like he's the kind of person I would normally hate. I would think they're just this, like, fucking elitist, like, snob, but he does a good job, I have to say. Like, shout out to Ronan Farrow. We love to read it. I highly recommend checking out the New Yorker, the Britney article, and not the New York Times, because they're just lame and they need to get a fucking life and worry about something important instead of taking passive-aggressive digs at Joe Rogan and his listeners, because it's sad and pathetic, and more people listen to Joe Rogan than give a fuck about the New York Times, so get over it, okay? So speaking of bullshit media, Meghan McCain has left The View, which means that the show is essentially dead again, just like it was before she joined. Just in case I have to make this clear again, I can't stand Meghan or anybody else on the show for that matter, so I don't want to get any fucking tweets or messages of people thinking that I'm a Meghan McCain fan just because I think the show is going to flop without her. I am not. I hate them all. I hate the show. I hate everything about it. Anyone involved in it. The producer, the people that write the questions, anybody that sits in the studio audience, anybody that watches the show on YouTube, anyone that gives it like a thumbs up, anyone that watches it from home, everything related to The View, I hate, conservative or liberal or anything, okay? So let's just make that clear. But honestly, that show is done. Like, I tweeted this the other day, but the only 2 times ever that The View was, like, actually relevant was during the Elizabeth Hasselbeck era and the Meghan McCain era. Like, it just does not work without that annoying conservative to fight the annoying neo-libs. Like, it's the whole format of the show. And the show also doesn't work during a Democratic administration because, like, they don't critique Democrats. So... And, like, the audience doesn't like that. Like, even if they did start, like, bashing Dems, like, the audience would hate it. So there's no show because there's no Republican in office. Like, the show is meant to be liberal porn where you kind of, like, watch an annoying, loudmouth Republican get ganged up on and embarrassed for half an hour each day. Like, that's the reason that people watch. Like, I saw this recent segment that they did on Kamala Harris and, you know, about how her office is in chaos and that she's kind of, like, floundering, which, I mean, was kind of obvious if anyone followed her, like, trip to Latin America. But anyway, on The View, they wouldn't actually discuss the substance of this article about Kamala. Like, instead, they blamed the person who leaked the story about Kamala to Politico. They were like, why are you leaking stories on a woman of color? Like, that was seriously the depth of their discourse on this. It's like, let's not talk about any issues about Kamala. Let's just have a debate about, well, should this person have leaked the information to Politico? And since they did, it's sexist and racist. Like, that's literally the segment. I'm not even joking. So, like, clearly they have nothing to talk about, at least as far as politics goes. I'm sure they probably spend a lot of time talking about Meghan Markle and, you know, fall fashion ideas, but politics, they're running dry. As much as I dislike Meghan, I did feel sorry for her on that show just because, like, she is technically the star of The View. Like, she's the reason that people watch, and she gets no credit for it, and both the audience and her co-hosts absolutely despise her. So everyone hates her. She has to come out every day and get tomatoes thrown at her in front of a baying crowd of fucking, like, libtards and aging twinks. Like, she may as well have been a contestant on, like, Fear Factor or something. Like, her job is to humiliate herself every day. And I guess after, what, like, 4 years, that has to, like, take its toll on you, because it's like, everyone fucking hates me. I come to work, my co-hosts hate me, the viewers hate me. Like, no one appreciates what I bring to this show, or, like, you know, gets it, because Meghan carries that show. It's like, who carried the first season of The Real Housewives of New Jersey? It was Danielle Staub. And the viewers that are celebrating Meghan's exit, they are so stupid. Like, look at the YouTube comments. They're all like, you know, glad she's gone and celebrating. Like, they don't even understand that she's the reason they watch the show. It's like, when you complain to get the villain from Housewives fired, they get rid of them, and then it's boring because, like, there's no show without the villain to, like, stir things up. Meghan did get out at the right time, though, because The View is going to slip back into irrelevance with Biden and Kamala in office, and I'm sure that Meghan knows that. Like, she's not dumb. Well, I mean, she is dumb, but she's not that dumb. Like, she gets the basics of how television works and, like, why people are tuning into The View. I mean, I'm sure she does. But I really think that The View is, like, the worst political show on TV, like, by far beyond anything out there, like, hands down. Like, nothing embodies what's wrong with political discourse and, like, mainstream media more than The View does. Like, first of all, it's called The View because there's one viewpoint. Like, I hate when people think that it's a show about, like, you know, different opinionated women. Like, it's four centrist neoliberals and one centrist neoconservative, and they're all millionaires, so they're all in the same class. And they share the same view on, like, most stuff. Like, as far as economics goes, they're probably all around the same spot. Social issues, for the most part, like, you know, they're all, like, pro-LGBT and everything like that. Foreign policy, I'm sure they're all into, you know, like, bombing the Middle East and everything. I don't see any, like, big anti-war statements going on The View. They differ on, I don't know, like, gun ownership maybe, and, like, just culture war crap that, like, is completely fucking irrelevant to the way that people are actually living their life day to day. So they just argue about the stupidest shit. And it was amazing that, like, the last 4 years, right, they didn't have one Bernie supporter or one Trump supporter on the panel. Actually, the people on the show were, like, adversarial to both Bernie and Trump. Like, they despised them. But it's, like, meant to be about diverse viewpoints. So Bernie and Trump, like, whatever, you can be a fan of them, you can hate them, that's all good. But they're the two biggest populist candidates from, like, the left wing and the right wing. And you don't have one person that supports any of them on your show that's called The View. Like, if the show was really about different views, you would have, like, an actual progressive lefty. There's no one that's actually on the left on The View. Then you would have, like, a libertarian, you know, the centrist neoliberal, which is what the show is now, a neocon like Meghan McCain, and then, like, some, you know, populist right-winger like, I don't know, Tommy Lauren or someone like that, or, like, a Candace Owens type. So you would have it from, like, across the board of, like, every sector of politics, but, you know, they don't. And I actually came up with my own fantasy view panel, but, like, there's no point even sharing it because it's like they would never get cast anyway. The show isn't about people discussing ideas. It's about, you know, like, housewife style, like, fighting and being bitchy, you know, like, what The View wants is Chelsea Handler versus Tommy Lauren, you know, like, that's the show. So whatever. My awesome view panel that I made up and wasted, like, half an hour thinking up is irrelevant. but yeah, the discourse between all the women on the show, it's so vile. Like, it's just constant like bitching and fighting. They're encouraged to scream at each other over like the stupidest things, and like they do not even get fired up over real issues. It's not like they're arguing over like, you know, foreign policy and minimum wage. It'll be like Megan's angry today that Whoopi isn't more angry over what AOC tweeted, and then Joy's mad that Megan isn't upset by the Republican who said a bad thing in the press conference. Like, it's so fucking stupid. Like, and the whole show is just about like, let's just make people hate each other and like fight with each other. Like, it's so toxic. It presents all politics like it's a fucking Marvel movie. Like, you know, Joy and Whoopi and fucking Sarah, I can't even remember all their names. They're like the Avengers, and then Meghan McCain is whoever the Marvel villain is. I don't watch the Marvel movies, but that's what it is, like the Avengers versus the villain, and then you vanquish them at the end of the episode, and Megan looks stupid, and then everyone cheers, and then we do it all again tomorrow. Like, have you seen Whoopi and Joy even try to discuss politics? Anytime they have to bring something up, they're like squinting at a teleprompter or like a note card that's been written for them. Like, they don't even really know what they're saying. It's like, hang on, wait, what am I supposed to say? And like, Whoopi's only 65. Did you know that? Like, she acts like she's 105. And half the time, it's not even their opinions that they're giving. Like, they just have a, you know, talking point that they've been given because they've got to get a headline and something that'll rile up the viewers, and then they move on. And I'm not saying that everyone on this show needs to be, like, a political genius. Like, I mean, I just defended Joe Rogan before. So, hello. Like, I do see value in just getting, like, normal everyday people discussing, like, politics and, you know, current issues in a way that, like, everyone can relate to, because when you have elites talking about things, like, yeah, it can be really informative and everything, but, like, everyday people, like, don't talk like that or think like that. So it is good to have people that aren't so, like, intellectual sometimes talking about things, and that goes for a Joe Rogan or, like, people on The View, but at least on Rogan, it's like, you know, it's Joe and then one guest, and it goes for, like, what, 2 to 3 hours. And if they've got someone really smart on, they have all of this space to discuss ideas and share information. You know, sometimes it's done intelligently, other times it's, you know, a shit show, depends on the guest. But on The View, it's like 5 hosts and then sometimes a guest on top of it. So it's about like 6 people and scripted questions, talking points that they need to hit in a very short amount of time. And then, you know, hopefully somebody gets into a fight so it'll go viral on Twitter. Like, it's just so fucking toxic. And The View has done way more to damage the culture than like any podcast has, like Joe Rogan or any other podcast. Like, just in the kind of combative political discourse that it promotes, and how they do use identity politics as a smokescreen to push like an anti-progressive agenda. Like, they rehab warmongers, they run defense for the absolute like most vile kinds of like neoliberal politics. Like, they're just a soulless witch's coven that will say anything for a dollar, basically. Like, you could put any fucking note card in front of these women and they'll say it as long as the check's in the mail. So anyway, Megan got out just in time. Like, I'm sure she's gonna pop up on you know, Fox News, you know, Megan Tonight or something. She might even join CNN. I wouldn't be surprised, or do a reality show. Actually, anywhere that Megan McCain ends up, I won't shock me, because I know she dislikes being in front of a camera. So she'll show up somewhere. As for The View, the ratings are going to keep sliding unless they can get somebody like, they would need someone really big, like a Candace Owens type maybe on there. But like, I don't think they would do that. Like, I actually don't think The viewers could handle that one, because, you know, Candace Owens is a Trump supporter, and I don't know, maybe it would be like too toxic for the viewers. Like, it's just, it's not easy to find somebody that is as obnoxious as Meghan McCain was, but they're also still like this centrist with like a completely bland, normal way of like thinking about things. Maybe they could get Caitlyn Jenner. Like, I mean, at 71, she's the right age for the show, and she is an out of touch elitist, so she'll fit right in with the old bats. Oh God, everyone's going to think I'm like the biggest right winger after this pod, aren't they? It's only going to get worse from here. Last time I got like this, somebody reviewed me and they said I sounded like AJ Benza, which like made no fucking sense because I didn't even say anything conservative, but you can't fix stupid, so whatever. Some people just don't get the vibe here, so let's just send out a group prayer to the brain dead folks that walk among us and pray for them. All right, so let's get into the Real Housewives of New York. Where to even begin with this? Jesus, I mean, there's so much to say about this. And I actually like Ebony. So, like, I'm not just going to rail her, I don't think. I mean, maybe I'm going to try not to rail her like I do with the other girls, because I just feel like there's a lot to this. And I've been trying to give Ebony the benefit of the doubt more so than other housewives, because I do, like, see a lot in her that I really like. By the way, I am on Patreon, as you know, patreon.com/unpopularJP. I will be dropping a new Patreon episode very soon, like within the next day or two. It might even be out right now at this very second while you're listening to me. I'm going to share some more OC stuff. I'm going to answer a few questions from you guys about podcast beefs and a podcaster that I think has snubbed me. I'm going to talk some hot topics. It'll be fun. Oh, and a shout out to my latest patrons, just quickly. I can't actually remember who I've shouted out yet and who I haven't, but here goes. Maybe some of you are getting a double shout out. Nicole, Jenny O, Angel, Kevin, Kristen, Leah, Michelle, Jill, and an extra big shout out to Zaza, who messaged me on Patreon and let me know that she's been following me since my blogging days, which was over 10 years ago, because she cited my very original OG blog that no one knows about anymore. So I kind of love that. Sometimes I get messages from people from back when I was a blogger and they're like, oh, I loved your blog and I love it. You know me, I need my ego stroked. Like, I need the good positive feedback, and I can't take even a shred of criticism. So whatever, I own it. All right. So Roni, if you're not watching this show, here's what's going on. I know that most of you are, but here's just a little recap. So there's been a lot of talk about adding more diversity to Bravo, which is much needed because they really didn't have much for a very long time. So this season they brought on Ebony, who is the first ever Black housewife on The Housewives of New York. We're 8 episodes into the season now, and every episode, Ebony brings up race issues. Like, sometimes it's just, like, you know, passing comments, and then other times it's a very big deal. It started off with some, like, Black history pop trivia, and then it has escalated as the season has progressed. Now, I did a whole pod episode about one of these incidents where she, like, brought up race by calling out Ramona's white fragility when Ramona wasn't even displaying white fragility. And, you know, white fragility is how Sutton reacted to Crystal in Lake Tahoe. Like, it's not what Ramona did. Then she yelled at Luann, and then Luann called her angry, and then she said that she was called angry because she was Black, and then she told Leah that Luann called her an angry Black woman, which Luann literally never said. She said, you're an angry woman. And that was just, like, tough to watch as well, because all the fucking dumbass viewers were trying to be so woke, so they just, like, piled on Luann and were like, oh, Luann's, you know, racist, and they automatically sided with Ebony, even though Ebony was ultimately wrong because she had just, like, yelled at Luann and then made it a race thing when Luann said, you're being angry. Now, I knew that the audience was going to turn on Ebony eventually. Last episode, I actually said that I felt like the viewers were overly hating on Leah because they didn't like Ebony's constant preaching, but God forbid they dislike anybody that's not white, so they redirected all of their anger onto Leah. Well, the viewers finally turned last week following, honestly, one of the most bizarre episodes of The Real Housewives that I've ever seen. So Ebony takes the women to Harlem for an educational dinner on Black history. Now, first of all, going to Harlem's kind of funny because Ebony's, like, not from the hood. She's not from Harlem. Like, she's not taking the women back to her childhood street to give them a glimpse of, you know, like, how people outside of the Upper East Side live. Like, Ebony grew up in North Carolina. She went to law school there. She worked in the public and private sector. Then she ended up in TV and radio and then Fox News for many years. She's very educated, very successful. She does run in elite 1% of circles. Like, Jill Zarin actually knew Ebony pre-Housewives because Ebony's gone to her parties before. So Ebony's running in the same circles as the Jill Zarins of the world. And, you know, Ebony in her confessionals, she's like, you know, I've been in these women's world. Now it's time for them to come into my world. Like, this isn't your world. Like, you're not some barista on minimum wage working in the bad part of Harlem. Like, you're a fucking glamorous, beautiful, successful lawyer and TV personality who hangs out with Jill Zarin. So let's just, like, check that. Also, the restaurant they went to looked really nice. I mean, I don't know if it had been zhuzhed up for filming or something, but on the show, it looked like fancy. So the women sit down and Ebony's at the head of the table and she assigns all the ladies an iconic Black figure from Harlem. Like, Luann was Billie Holiday, Leah was James Baldwin. Then Ebony stands up and she starts giving everybody a history lesson about, like, the person they were assigned, like, one by one, really drags on. And because she's a lawyer and she actually used to work as, like, a teaching assistant, I think, in, like, college or, I don't know, something like that, teaching assistant at universities, like, she comes off like a teacher who is speaking down to students. It's not like a friend's trying to, like, share some information with you. It's like, class is in session, I'm the teacher. And, you know, Ebony's the youngest person on the show and the newest cast member, and she's, like, lecturing a bunch of 50-something-year-old women about Black history at what's supposed to be a fun housewives dinner. Like, I feel like even just the hierarchy of the show, like, remove, like, the whole race thing out of it, but just someone coming on as a newbie who's, like, much younger, it's her first season, and, like, talking down to the OGs and the veterans and running the show like that, I don't think that would sit well with anybody. Like, actually, I think they sat through it because it was a race thing, because I think if it had been anything else and someone like a White House wife had done it, they would have been like, yeah, I'm not here to be schooled by you. And it was honestly one of the most bizarre things, like, I've ever seen on this show, because it was so out of place. It was like Ebony was like an alien from another planet. Like, it just made zero sense within the context of the Real Housewives. I'm like, hang on, wait, did I change over to CNN or something? Like, what's going on? By the way, for all the woke R-words out there who think it's racist to not want to sit through this fucking dinner, like, just replace the Black history lesson with anything else, like environmental activism, foreign policy, climate change, human rights issues, the history of Australia. Like, nobody wants to endure a college class while they're out to dinner. Like, you guys, like, focus so much on the race thing, but it's like, you could make it anything. Like, there's a lot of worthy, important causes out there. If I'm going out for, like, a social dinner with friends, like, I'm not here to be educated and sit through a fucking college class. And I do think there is actually a time and a place for this dinner, because, like, it is interesting to learn history, and in the right context, I think this could have been fun and, like, you know, an educational activity and, like, worked, but it just wasn't. Like, it missed the mark. Like, it didn't work. Also, Ebony, like, bringing up race every episode of the season doesn't help either, like, especially with how she misquoted Luann. Like, if this was, like, one of the first, maybe the second time she had done it with the viewers, like, I think we would have been more open to it, like, the women and the viewers, because it's like, oh, okay, you know, this is really interesting that Ebony's taking them to do this, you know, this activity. But because it's like every single episode and then it culminated in this, it's like, all right, fuck, here we go again with Ebony. So Ebony's delivering her sermon, and then the new girl, Bashawn, who is also Black, she's like interrupts and she's just like, all right, you know, enough with this. We're all American. Let's stop the division between Black and white and, you know, have some fun. We're meant to be out for dinner. Like, I'm paraphrasing her, but she said something along those lines. And then Ebony, by the way, everyone loves Bashawn except Ebony. Ebony in her confessional, like, accuses Bashawn of being All Lives Matter, which in today's society has a very racist connotation. Like, at best, All Lives Matter is ignorant, and at worst, it's racist. So, like, Ebony girl, like, fucking stop it. Like, it's not that deep. This is the wrong show. Like, Meghan McCain just left The View. Go audition for that. And now her behavior has gone past, like, just bringing out racial awareness to, like, smears and attacks. Like, first angry Black woman with Luann, now you're accusing someone of All Lives Matter because they don't agree with you. It's like, what the fuck is with that? Like, why are you tagging people with that? So the dinner ends. Everyone obviously hated it. Later on, Leah sits Ebony down, like, the next day, I think it is, and sort of tries to gently tell her to try a different approach with the women and, you know, maybe a better way to get her message through. And you can honestly tell that they have a real friendship. Like, people have had a lot to say about Leah, which I think is, like, quite unfair, but you can actually see that they're real friends. And it's kind of like, you know, when you've got to tell a friend something, but you don't want to just, like, slam them because, you know, you respect them and you're aware of their feelings and you know how certain things might be a trigger for them. So you will kind of, like, put it in cotton wool a bit and you're just, like, very sensitive to them. Whereas if it's someone that you don't really care about, you'll just tell it to them, like, straight up because you don't really care that much about hurting them. But with a friend, you take more care. And I felt that between Leah and Ebony, and I thought it was, like, nice to see some real friendship on the show because it's quite rare that we see people that are real friends, and I really think that Leah and Ebony are, like, actual friends. So later in the episode, Ramona has Ebony over to her house, and Ebony starts trying to force Ramona into a conversation about Kamala Harris becoming the first Black female vice president. Now, it's not like a natural discussion at all. Like, this comes off like a White House press conference or something where, like, Ebony is the, like, you know, eager journalist and Ramona's like this politician who wants to change the subject. So Ramona's like, you know, I don't want to talk about politics. Like, let's just, you know, relax. It's a stressful time. I don't want to talk about it. And Ebony won't drop it. Like, Ebony's like, Kamala is our first female vice president. That's an objective fact. It's like, oh my God, girl, like, calm down. I invited you into my home. Like, I thought we were fucking going to have a glass of wine or something. And you're like carrying on about Kamala Harris. And it was just so bad on so many levels. It did cross a boundary big time. Because if someone says, like, I really don't want to talk about this, and you're aggressively, like, forcing the discussion, it's an objective fact. Like, that's like crossing a boundary. And in someone else's home, like, who aggressively forces somebody into a political conversation when they've said that they don't want to talk about it? That's just fucking weird. And Ramona had to walk into another room just to get away from Ebony. And the people defending Ebony are so full of shit, because if Siggy Flicker was still on Housewives and she tried to talk about Trump to the women, do you actually think the viewers would like it? And if the women are saying, no, I don't want to talk about politics, but Siggy's like in their face like, well, he's our president. You need to acknowledge that Donald Trump is our president. That's an objective fact. People would be so outraged and disgusted, and they'll be like, why is Siggy forcing her, you know, right-wing views? So it goes both ways, guys. Like, if someone says they don't want to talk about politics, whatever the politics are, shut up. And the same goes for the Harlem dinner. Like, people are giving it a pass because it's an important race issue, but then if it's something they didn't agree with, or just something that's, like, not woke, they wouldn't like it. That, like, viewers would be like, oh, well, you know, I care about the cause, but, like, I don't understand why this is on Housewives, but then because it's, like, a race thing, everyone's, like, all behind it. Ebony banging on about Kamala Harris being the first female VP is, like, the problem. Like the problem is people that care more about the fucking gender of the politician than the actual policies. Like, fucking Ebony knows. So then just seeing her carrying on with this stuff for the viewers is so frustrating, because I know that she knows better. When Ebony was yapping at Ramona about Kamala, like, Ramona should have been like, wow, like, you know, this is scary that somebody who the American public, the American people rejected is, like, being appointed vice president now, and they could actually become president soon if Dementia Joe has another brain fart. Like, do we even live in a democracy? You know, wow, Ebony, wow. Like, Ramona should have said that and then seen what Ebony said. But the whole thing, it's just wrong. It's wrong politically speaking, and it's just wrong in terms of, like, bad manners. Like, she also puts on this big song and dance about how, you know, she's a black woman and she doesn't have the luxury of escaping politics like Ramona does, which I just felt like Ebony was kind of weaponizing her race again to win an argument like she did with Luann. Like, yes, Ebony's black, and of course, there's, like, discrimination and things that come with that, not taking that away from her, but it's also like, well, you're also young, wealthy, beautiful, famous, you know, you can afford healthcare. Like, people like Ebony and the women of The View, they never bring up class issues because it just shows how much more privileged they are than, like, 98% of the country, including other black people, like, disproportionately. Like, the fucking privilege gap between, you know, the elites, the 1%, whatever, the rich people, and the fucking working class people is bigger than most racial divides. So let's get into Ebony's politics. Like, we all know she was a Fox News correspondent for 4 years. I brought this up when she joined Roni, by the way, like, the first episode when everyone, like, you know, didn't want to acknowledge it, like, was just sweeping it under the rug. I brought it up straight up. Like, roll the tape back and check what I told you at the start of the season. I said Ebony was on Fox promoting conservative talking points, and now suddenly she's Miss Woke, and it wasn't adding up. It never added up. Like, when I had Dan on as well, and we talked about how, like, Ebony speaks like a politician all the time, and she just, like, doesn't seem genuine. She's like a robot. And I said at that time as well, like, how people on cable news, like, they are actors. Like, that's a gig. That's a TV gig. It's not like, oh, I'm here, you know, sharing my political views for, like, the good of the world. It's like, no, I'm fucking, you know, paid to say something, and I'll say because it's a good opportunity in media. And, you know, Ebony was out there doing the whole Fox News thing, and now, you know, like, while she was on Fox, and now she's on Bravo doing the whole woke thing. So it's like, do you guys see it now? Everyone was so desperate to stand the first black housewife, which, to be fair, like, I get it. Ebony is a very impressive person. Like, she's beautiful, she's intelligent, she's educated, she's, you know, quick. Like, there's a lot to stand about her, but people were like just so gung-ho, I think, about getting behind her with the whole like diversity stuff that they really ignored like very obvious things that weren't adding up about her political past and just even the way, again, like I said, she presents. It's like a politician. It's like, this doesn't seem real to me. And can you imagine if a white housewife came on New York after 4 years on Fox News? They would be destroyed by social media and the fans. Like, they probably wouldn't even get the job by Bravo in the first place. But if they did, there'll be fucking people on Twitter making change.org petitions. Like, you know, you can't have a Fox News conservative on Bravo. Like, you know, this is disgusting. But then with Ebony, like, people completely ignored it. And I talked about this on Ryan Bailey's show, which I recorded earlier today. But basically, Ryan and I, we just feel like... Actually, I don't want to like speak for him, but he did kind of say the same thing. But it's a bit like Ebony's on The Housewives right now to audition for a gig on The View or MSNBC or something. Like, that's what's behind a lot of the social justice stuff she's doing. And that's why she comes off like a teacher instead of, you know, a real friend and a real person. Also, I do think she's legit friends with Leah. Like, all their scenes together, I do see like a lot of affection and respect, you know, between them. But you know why I think they're friends? Because, like, they have the same politics. Like, I think that Leah is, like, libertarian-ish, you know, anti-establishment, and Ebony's probably a political independent. Like, I don't think she's a raging Kamala Harris Democrat, you know, even though she plays one on TV. And I've got to say as well, like, the woke Bravo fans, the way that they're kind of, like, talking about Ebony now with her, you know, conservative past, like, I do find that a bit shady because it's like... I don't think these people ever really liked Ebony from the start, and now they're just, like, using the Fox News stuff to kind of, like, dehumanize her because it's convenient right now. It's like, instead of being mad that she's not being authentic, you're more mad that, like, maybe she's conservative. It's just kind of stupid. And it's dumb, too, because every housewife's conservative. Like, how hard is it for people to understand this? Like, they're all one percenters. They don't want to pay more taxes. They don't want fucking poor immigrants, you know, stinking up their gated communities. They are conservative. So stop with the whole dividing all the housewives by their politics. It's just stupid. People also feel like they can hate Ebony now because Bashawn has joined the show. So it's kind of like... You know, now they don't have to feel guilty that they don't like the first, you know, black housewife on New York because there's like a different fun black housewife that they can stand. And that just kind of shows how all the woke Bravo viewers like completely tokenize the minority housewives that come on the shows and they overperform with how much they like them on social media because they think it makes them look progressive or something. By the way, Bashawn, the love for her is not going to last. I think she was fantastic during her first episode. Like, I want to love her, and I did love her from what I saw, but I've been following her on social media for ages, and she's one of the thirstiest people I've ever seen in, like, the Bravo universe. Like, she reminds me of Marie and Heidi Dillon from the first season of Dallas. If you're a true Housewives fan, you'll remember their social media activity during their seasons. Like, she's just too thirsty to be full-time. Trust me. Like, you're going to see it. It's going to... I think it'll either play out on the show or you'll just see it if you're following her on social media. Like, you just can't get that excited about wanting to be on TV. Like, it kind of doesn't work. And I think that's why Bashawn is not full-time, because what we've seen of Bashawn now, you would think, wow, why wouldn't they make this, you know, fun, dynamic, like, opinionated person, you know, full-time? She brings a diversity. She seems to have more of a genuine connection. Like, what's not clicking? It's the thirst. And that's going to come out. That's my prediction. So just remember I said that. Anyway, there is even more to this Ebony stuff. Jesus Christ. So, Brian Moylan, the famed Housewives recapper. Everyone that watches Housewives knows who Brian Moylan is, so I'm sure I don't have to fucking give you his Wikipedia biography. He recapped the Roni episode, and he gently criticized Ebony, and it was couched in, like, praise for her and understanding and stuff, but... I don't know, he kind of, like, criticized her approach in a nice way, and then she wrote a whole public blog post calling him out and ripping him to pieces. I skimmed his recap, and, you know, I kind of went through her response. Like, he is an amazing writer, but his recap was kind of couched in too many, like, qualifiers and excuses because he's a white American and they're all terrified to, like, talk about anything racial, God forbid, so I just didn't want to sift through all that. And then... But I did go through it, like, you know, as much as I could, and I read Ebony's response, and it's just like, ugh, her response was just so overly serious and dramatic, and in bad faith, too. Like, Brian was very complimentary to her and understanding, and she still nitpicked what she could to make out, like, he's uncomfortable around, like, blackness, and she was being shamed for her blackness. Like, girl, nobody here is uncomfortable around blackness. We're uncomfortable around bullshit, and that's what you're serving us. Ebony literally reposted a photo of herself the other day with, like, Tommy Lauren, like, you know, the super right-wing Fox News personality. Tommy Lauren, who called Black Lives Matter the new KKK. But with Ebony, it's like, Brian Moylan's the problem. Like, come on, give me a fucking break. Like, she knew that the Brian Moylan thing would be good for clout, and I think she's embarrassed that the Harlem dinner didn't work. Like, it didn't land. Get over it. It's not that deep. Some stuff just doesn't work. Try a different approach. It was the wrong time. It was the wrong place. It was the wrong audience. It didn't work. Stop tripling down on it, Ebony. Like, enough. It's just like this constant overreaction she has to everything. Like, she takes everything so seriously. And then you can't even tell how much of it is genuine because the whole thing does feel like an MSNBC audition. I mean, thank God that I'm not relevant, you know, not relevant enough for Ebony to attack. Because, you know, if I was like Danny Pellegrino saying this or something, like, I'll probably get a public letter from Ebony about me too. And then what can you even say back to her when she calls you out? Like, she's a highly educated lawyer, a fucking cable news pundit, which you've really got to know how to fight someone to be on cable news because that's what the medium is. Like, she knows every trick in the book to, like, win an argument or to, like, shut someone down, whether she's right or wrong. So anyone that goes against her automatically is, like, kind of set up to fail just because she's, like, too good with her words. It's the same with Bethany. Like, Bethany got into plenty of fights where she wasn't actually right, but because she is so witty and she's so good in a fight, like, you just can't win even if you're right. God, why do I even like Ebony? Now I've gone through this, I'm like, God, I feel like I've defended her actually a lot, even though I've, like, criticized her when others haven't. I have been very fair to her. And now I'm just like, God, she's just annoying me. You know, I think in real life with no cameras, I would really get along with Ebony. Like, I think me, Ebony, and Leah would actually have so much in common and, like, so much to talk about. I can imagine us, like, talking for hours and having, like, a great time together. But this Ebony for the cameras, like, I can't do it. It's too much. She's on the wrong show. Nobody can criticize her. She can't take ownership of anything she does wrong. Like, it's just exhausting. It's exhausting the viewers. It's exhausting me. I'm exhausted from recording this podcast. Like, I said on Ryan's pod earlier today, but I watch a lot of political content, like, a lot. I don't need every episode of The Housewives politicized. Like, that doesn't make me ignorant or uncomfortable around race because I don't want every episode of the fucking Housewives being a social justice class. Like, I don't even mind it a few times, but every episode, give it a rest. Her message of, like, you know, racial awareness and social justice, it's not even getting through to people because she's, like, overshot the whole thing. Like, now everyone just doesn't like her now and wants her off the show. And now that Bashaun's there and all fun, like, everyone's, like, flocking behind Bashaun. So, like, Ebony girl, just get out of your own head. Stop overthinking everything. Loosen up. Stop treating the Real Housewives like an audition for The View. Stop preaching to everybody. Just stop changing your politics depending on where the check is coming from. Like, just be yourself. Jesus fucking Christ. Like, fuck me. Okay, let's get into this Rachel Lindsay op-ed that she penned for Vulture. I've been meaning to talk about this for a while. These are not great optics, I'm aware, like, coming for Ebony and now coming for Rachel Lindsay. Although I did drag the women on The View today as well, including Meghan McCain, who was very, very white. She's about as white as you can get. So I guess today I'm just a plain misogynist instead of a racist misogynist. I'll take it. I will take what I can get right now. By the way, I looked at the leaked Bachelor in Paradise cast and the spoilers. Like, I couldn't help myself. That's going to be a good season. Like, everybody that I wanted to be on that is on there. Like, Thomas from Katie's season, if you're watching The Bachelorette with Katie, Thomas is, like, the only guy that I like. Oh, and I like the black guy that does the British accent. He's so cute. I like him. I don't know if he's on Paradise or not. I didn't check every name, but Thomas is on there. Bisexual Demi is back for another round. Why am I not surprised? I feel like Demi's going to be buzzing around Bachelor for many years to come. Emotionally unstable Kelsey from Peter's season. She was my favorite from his season. I really wanted her to be the next Bachelorette because I just imagined her crying and like breaking down all the time. Becca is back after she broke up with Garrett. I think it's the first time they've ever had a lead do Paradise, so cannot wait for that. And you know, this is what makes being a Bachelor fan worth it. Like, I know that it's kind of hard to get into the show and every episode is like 2 fucking hours and really boring, but once you get over the hump and then you like know who everybody in the world is, like, you do get the joy of all the crossover romances and feuds and social media drama, and then Paradise is like the big payoff where it all comes together, and they're really genius with the way that they do storylines and they bring in drama that like happened off the show into the show, and you know, who was DMing who, and it's really good. So can't wait for that. All right. Rachel Lindsay. You know, Rachel and Nick Vial are the two most irritating people in the whole franchise. Like, they're both such fame whores and they just milk the franchise to death, but they kind of like pretend that they don't. Like, they sort of act like they're above it, but they're just like so thirsty. Nick is just a thirsty douche and a mansplainer. And I don't really like to use that word, like, it's cringe, but he does mansplain, I swear. And right now he's inserting himself into the drama about like Bachelor stars taking PPP loans as if that has anything to do with him, but he just fucking has to jump in, doesn't he? Meanwhile, Rachel Lindsay is just a serial whinger. Like, she's the hand wringer in chief, I swear. Like, all she does is complain and come after people, but she never applies the same rules to herself. Like, last year she got backlash for doing a podcast with Claudia Oshry, who is considered problematic because she had, like, you know, racist tweets and stuff. But, you know, anybody else with bad tweets, like, Rachel will go after. And then fans actually brought up the Claudia Oshry thing, like, when Rachel had the whole issue with Chris Harrison, but then instead of Rachel holding herself to the same standard, she just, like, deleted Instagram and was like, you know, I'm getting death threats from racists. Like, okay, girl, like, you're always a victim. So she penned this op-ed for Vulture, and it's honestly so ridiculous. Like, and a lot of it is just false. And it pretty much just paints her out to be this big victim, and everyone is racist, and The Bachelor is racist, and the fans are racist, who she even calls them The Bachelor Clan with a K. And now she's officially cutting ties with the franchise because it's too problematic. It's, you know, she's all like, you know, I don't want anything to do with The Bachelor, but I'm penning a whole op-ed about them and just going to go on and on about it. So, okay. Where do I start? Like, look, for people who don't know, Rachel Lindsay, she is one of the biggest stars to ever come out of the Bachelor franchise. Like, she actually has achieved everything that everyone on this show wants. Like, she went on The Bachelor, became The Bachelorette, met the love of her life on there. They're married now. She gets invited back for, like, all the spin-offs and guest appearances. She hosts the official Bachelor podcast until she quit recently, but she did. She has another podcast on the Ringer Network, which is, like, one of the biggest podcast networks. She hosted a show on MTV. She is an official correspondent on Extra. She has a book deal. Like, she has it all. She actually might be the most successful person ever on The Bachelor. I'm not even kidding. Like, nobody has had it better than Rachel Lindsay in this show, like, in terms of what they've got out of it, really. And she's kind of known for, like, bashing The Bachelor a lot and always inserting herself into everything, which is, like, annoying, but also, I guess, smart, because she has kept herself out there in the headlines, like, you know, for years in a way that not that many others have been able to do. But, you know, from reading the Vulture article, like, you would think she was the most hated and unfairly maligned person to ever be on the show. Like, the way that she presents herself and presents the show compared to what the actual, like, reality of her situation is like, so different. So let's get into it. She opens up with all the Chris Harrison drama, you know, the infamous interview about Matt James and Rachel Kirkconnell. We're not rehashing that again. That's done. That chapter is closed. But Rachel writes, I couldn't maintain my composure anymore. I was exhausted, I said, and I needed to step away from the franchise. Like, this sentiment is repeated throughout the whole piece, but first of all, like, exhausted? Really? I mean, okay, Chris Harrison talked over you in an interview, and then basically all of the Bachelor franchise and the fans and the media took your side. Like, I get that it was frustrating, but come on, exhausted? You had to walk away? Okay, like, calm down. Also, she is walking away now that she's, like, milked everything she can out of The Bachelor. Like, let's be clear. Like, her career is going so well that it's actually in her best interest now to remove herself from The Bachelor and to focus on other stuff so she can kind of, like, continue to grow her profile outside of The Bachelor instead of being tied to it forever. Whereas, you know, Nick Viall, even though he's done very well for himself, he sort of, like, stayed with Bachelor too long, where it's like, I don't think he has a career outside of it. Whereas, you know, Rachel Lindsay obviously has bigger goals for herself. So, you know, I don't think she's just leaving The Bachelor because it's racist. It's a smart career move at this point. So a bit later in the article, she writes, by the time that segment with Chris aired, I was known as the contestant who was always starting trouble. That Rachel Lindsay, the one who couldn't stay quiet, who bites the hand that feeds, Bachelor Nation's public enemy number one. Later, I would be known as the one responsible for Harrison eventually leaving the franchise. He announced his departure earlier this month with a reported 8-figure settlement, and if he spends all of that, I'm sure fans will somehow blame me too. Okay, Rachel Lindsay is extremely popular with a lot of Bachelor fans. Like, she's basically, like, the queen of the woke segment of Bachelor fans. And the woke ones are the ones that, like, run social media and, like, run this very popular subreddit and everything. They love her. Like, she wouldn't keep getting invited back for shows and get to, like, host the podcast and everything. And I don't think people blamed her for Chris Harrison being fired. People blamed ABC more. So again, she's just making up that everyone hates her and that, you know, everyone's gonna, like, villainize her. I mean, I'm calling her out now, but, like, not many people do. Like, what I'm doing right now is, like, not something that happens that often with Rachel Lindsay. So then she writes, after 100 episodes, I announced my departure from that podcast. I'm exhausted from defending myself against a toxic fandom. So the Bachelor fans are toxic now, like, if they don't agree with you, like... To be fair, like, I'm sure she does get, like, racist hate and people that just don't like her because she's vocal about, like, social justice issues and stuff. Like, she definitely would get some of that shit. Like, anyone that even speaks up about whatever politically, whether it's conservative politics or social justice politics, whatever, like, you just get backlash. But she also had a lot of people calling her out for the Claudia Oshry thing, so they're just holding her to, like, her own standards, but she can't take it, of course, so now everyone's, like, toxic that they're calling her out. Then she goes on to talk about how she ended up on The Bachelor and she sort of wasn't sure if she would do it because it's not inclusive enough, but then they talked her into it because they, like, you know, really wanted her on the show because, like, she's a good cat. She's, you know, intelligent, educated, you know, smart, like, you know, she's someone that you would want. Like, she's definitely an asset to the show. So she talks about her time on the season and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then she gets into a thing where she says that she had a feud with this girl, Vanessa, on the show who ended up winning. And the producers wanted them to have a confrontation about their, like, issues to discuss it. And then Rachel makes this about race, even though there sort of wasn't anything to do with race about it. But she says that she didn't want to be perceived as, like, an angry black woman when she had this scene with Vanessa, but then she accuses Vanessa of having unconscious bias towards her. And then after they filmed the scene, she went crying to the producers and she was, like, furious that she might come off badly in this scene. And then the producers told her that, like, they weren't going to air it. And then she says that they actually protected her, like, several times with certain scenes. Like, another one was where she got really drunk, she says, and they didn't air it because, like, they didn't want to make her look bad. So they were essentially giving her a good edit because they wanted her to be the Bachelorette. So far things are going pretty good with The Bachelor. Like, they really wanted her on the show. They're, you know, editing her in a very favorable light. They're not putting out things that she doesn't want out there that are going to make her look bad. So then she gets eliminated by Nick and they ask her to become the Bachelorette. And she's concerned about this because she's going to be the first female black lead, actually first black lead period at this point. But, you know, she decided to do it out of the goodness of her heart because she wanted to, like, show diversity and inspire little girls. Guys, it had nothing to do with aspirations of a media career. It was all about, like, the cause. So, you know, good for you. Good for you, Rachel Lindsay. So she's talking with ABC about being the Bachelorette and she asked for, like, all these changes. So she wants a diverse cast. She wants black producers behind the camera because apparently all the producers were white. So she wants black producers, diversity on the show, like in front of the camera and behind the camera. And she said that ABC, like, were very accommodating. They did all of the things that she requested. She said that they would even come to her and they would be like, you know, are you okay with the hair person? Are you okay with the makeup person? It was just all about sort of like, how can we make things easier for you? So sounds like a great ride so far, very accommodating. And her season comes out and it's the most diverse season that they've ever had. But then she writes, still, I'd expected more diversity and I hadn't prepared for how much the casting would prioritize people who might cause drama in the house. In my case, the drama was largely centered around race and I didn't want to use the show to tear the black men down, but I was constantly put in situations where there was a little bit of that going on. Okay, so it's like the most diverse in the history of the show, but it's still not diverse enough for you. Got it. I looked up the picture of her cast because I couldn't remember because it's been so long since I saw it. It was very diverse. And then she's shocked that they prioritize drama. This is The Bachelor. Like, half the reason that we watch the show is for the drama. And you know this. Like, this is another Ebony situation where it's like they're pissed off that the entire show hasn't changed into, like, a social justice thing. So it's, like, not enough that people, like, make changes and make it more diverse and put these things on. It's like, no, that's not enough. You have to completely change it. And, you know, why is there drama? Hello? And then she says that one of the black guys on the show, this guy named Will, wasn't into black women and she makes a big deal out of it. Now, I don't know if producers purposely cast him, like, wanting an issue with this. I mean, obviously he came onto the show knowing that Rachel Lindsay was the lead, so he must be into black women somewhat. And I'm watching Katie's season right now, right? And her whole thing is that she's, like, very sex positive, very sexual, and they put a socially awkward virgin on her season. Like, that's the season. They do it to everyone. So, you know, Rachel's sort of trying to make it out like, you know, it's specifically a race issue as if, like, she was singled out with this casting. But it's like, no, they cast like this every season. It's kind of what makes it funny. Like, when you cast the people for the suitor, like the bachelor or the bachelorette, you get a bunch of people that, you know that they're going to connect with and that are potential, like, partners for them. And then you just have, like, people that are the opposite of them and that are there to make drama. Like, that's how the show works. So then Rachel writes about this guy, Lee Garrett, who had some racist tweets resurface. She says that she didn't find out that he was racist until after filming. And she has no idea if producers knew that he had these tweets. This is what she wrote. As details about him started to come out, I tried to give the show the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they didn't know, but as I reflected on it, I thought, no. Let's say the producers didn't know about the tweets. You still brought on a guy who had no experience with black people who is from Mississippi. You brought him on knowing he was ignorant. You brought him on to see what could happen. You can play the we didn't know he was racist card, but there's no way you didn't know he would cause a problem in the house. Okay, well, just because someone's from Mississippi or from the South doesn't automatically make them racist. And yeah, he was probably cast to be a villain since it's The Bachelor. And they cast villains, as you know, because you'd already done a season of The Bachelor and I'm sure you've seen it before. The whole show is, like, that's the show. So what, you wanted no villains on your season? Stop. And I will just say, like, of course, Rachel as a, like, has every right to be upset as a black woman. If, you know, this guy is on the show and he has racist tweets, I'll be like, what? Like, you know, was there a racist on my season? But then she's friends with Claudia Oshry, who has racist tweets. So it just sort of doesn't add up to me. I'm like, oh, okay, so that's okay. But then that's not all right. And then she has this meltdown about who she wants to send home. This is during filming of the season. And, you know, she's sort of like trying to figure out how to do it. And the producers sort of put some pressure on her, wanting her to keep more of the, like, diverse people, like the non-white people on there. But then she's like, well, they're making drama. I don't want them on the show. So she's freaking out about that. And then she said that the producer, like her main producer, whose name was Caitlin, was trying to help her with the decision. And Chris Harrison came in, like, wanting to help her out. Like, you know, what can we do for you? And she just said, well, I was still alone in this process because they're white. So they don't understand me. They don't understand a black lead. So, you know, I've got these white people around me because they hired all these black producers. But I think the black producers they hired were more for just, like, all of the cast and everything. But her, like, main producer, which is probably one of the higher up producers in the show, was, like, white, and Chris Harrison's white. So that was just hard for her dealing with the white folk. And she got pissed during the hometown dates because she's with this guy, Peter, and he's white and he was the runner up. And he has, like, some friends that are in like mixed interracial, like, relationships. So they wanted Rachel to, like, meet with them and discuss, like, interracial couples on camera. And then Rachel gets really pissed off about this. So she writes, I turned to my producer and gave her a look. I wish they had caught my face on camera. The way I turned and stared at her like, really, bitch? They separated us. Peter got to talk to his homeboys and I was with the women, who talked about having mixed babies and what it was like to be an interracial couple. I couldn't believe it. I'm black. I have interracial couples in my family. I'm old enough to understand what I'm entering into and the difficulties that come with it. I felt exploited. If anything, that situation turned me off Peter because I couldn't see myself hanging out with them. They were nice, but it was so contrived. The producers really thought, how great all these mixed couples can come together. They were only looking at the optics of the situation. And that's the thing, we didn't get into the depths of what it can feel like for a black man to date a white woman in the Midwest. We didn't get into the struggles, into how hard it is to raise biracial children. We didn't have the important conversations. It was a missed opportunity, which is a theme within the franchise. Oh, this looks good, the producers think, without peeling back the layers of what it means. I said to my producer, why would y'all put me in this situation? She said, we thought it would be a good storyline. They thought it would make me comfortable. It shows how wrong they get it. They are assuming how we think rather than actually talking to the person whose real life experience it is. All right, so that's quite a long one, but she bangs on about wanting the diversity on the show and to put more focus on stuff like this, and then they do it and she doesn't like it. And she says that it's contrived and not meaningful enough. Well, it sounded like they wanted to talk about having mixed children because she goes, they brought up about having mixed children, but then she's like, we didn't talk about how hard it is to raise biracial children. So I don't know. And okay, she's saying that the conversation's not in depth enough. Well, you are filming a scene on The Bachelor. Again, it is still The Bachelor. Like, it's The Bachelor. Like, that's the show. Like, the dates on The Bachelor are like famously shallow. Like, that's kind of the joke, is that they sit down and they don't really talk about anything except their feelings for each other. And obviously the producers went out of their way trying to show diverse couples and to give Rachel this chance to talk to them. Like, she could have steered the conversation as the lead in any way she wanted. She could have asked them some like tough questions. I'm sure they would have answered her. Like, they're sitting there to film a thing, but okay, so she's not happy with it. So I don't know, it just sounds to me like the producers were trying really hard. They set that up, they hired all the diversity behind the camera, they cast more diversity, like the most diverse season ever. They tried with this, just nothing's good enough. Then Rachel gets pissed off again about the ending of the show because she didn't like how the runner-up Peter got a good edit in her opinion, and she says that they, like, robbed her of her love story. So she writes, Peter, meanwhile, was the audience favourite, but if you looked closely, he didn't offer anything other than being a fine physical specimen. He fit the prototype of a Bachelor Nation contestant, because Bachelor Nation applauds mediocrity. And because he's a white man and he's attractive, there are certain stereotypes that are placed on him that are positive. He's a good person. He has a good heart. He's from the Midwest. He works hard. Well, that's the show. Like, again, I don't know if she understood what show she was on. And there's many times that the winning couple gets a bad edit. I mean, I don't think she got a bad edit, but there's plenty of times that the winning couple, their edit isn't as good. And the runner-up comes off really good because they need the runner-up to look good. So then the fans want the runner-up to, like, front the next season. And then they've got, like, a hit season on their hands. Like, that's the formula of the show. Like, if you look at Ari's season, Ari came off so bad when he ran off with Lauren, and Ari and Lauren are like one of the strongest couples on the show now. They've got like 2-3 kids. I don't know. They've got multiple kids. They're married. They're so happy. And then they gave Becca that really great edit because, you know, Becca got dumped, and then Becca went on to become the Bachelorette. And Rachel even admitted earlier in the piece that they gave her a really good edit when she went on Nick's season because they wanted her to be the Bachelorette, so they kept out, like, damaging things about her. So it's like, that's not about race. Like, this is just how reality TV works, and you benefited from it early, and then as soon as you don't get the edit that you wanted, then now it's like a racial thing? Like, oh my God, stop. Okay, so listen to this. She writes, for the After the Rose special, I sat on a stage with Chris and Peter while we relitigated our breakup. Peter apologized for something cruel he had said at the time, that I would be settling for a life of mediocrity without him. I responded on stage by saying I was living my best life. Somehow that was twisted into a negative thing. Chris asked me if I was angry. Peter said he felt attacked by me. He became the victim in that narrative. I was sitting there seething. I knew my reputation was over in that moment. All people saw was this devastated white man. How dare this angry black woman treat him like that when he is so remorseful about what he did? Your reputation's over? Wait, what? Peter Krause is irrelevant now. Like, no one knows who Peter Krause is, and you're one of the top, maybe top three biggest Bachelor stars in Bachelor Nation. Like, you're not a victim. Your reputation was not over. You had countless opportunities ever since then, both inside The Bachelor and outside The Bachelor. Like, what is this fake narrative? Like, this never even happened. So she's painting this whole picture in this article that's just, like, it's not even true. Like, I mean, it's sort of true, but then she puts, like, a twist and a spin on it that isn't true. So after her season, obviously, she goes on to, like, make more Bachelor guest appearances, and she says that she's, like, pushing for diversity behind the scenes, and anytime she had a chance, she'd be like, you know, pick the person of colour, pick the person of colour, and she's getting really pissed off because, you know, she feels like they're not putting another lead of colour. Like, she cites some certain examples, like Mike Johnson not being the Bachelor, and then she brings up Becca and Garrett. All right, let me read what she wrote about Becca and Garrett, and then I'll explain if you don't know that whole situation. She writes, "It wasn't until around 2018 that I started to feel uneasy. I watched the show fall back into old patterns. I grew annoyed by Becca Kufrin's season because of the way producers chose to depict a white woman's story versus mine. She got engaged to Garrett, who had a history of liking offensive tweets. They tiptoed around it and gave him an opportunity to explain. It was as if they'd checked off a box with me, and once they'd done that, they went right back to doing what was comfortable and easy." Okay, well, first of all, her saying just the thing about how they depicted a white woman's story, that the edit just depends on the season. There's plenty of leads, white leads, that had, like, not a great edit, and there's plenty that got a good edit. It just depends on how the storyline goes, not a race thing. Okay, so but Becca, right? So put this in context. Becca was actually Rachel's Bachelor podcast co-host, so they were doing the official Bachelor podcast together. And Becca was the Bachelorette at the time, and they were still doing the podcast, and she picked this guy, Garrett, and he was cancelled because he liked some right-wing memes on Instagram. They weren't even, I'm trying to remember what they were, but they were just sort of like, they were more like edgy, kind of like right-wing Facebook type memes, you know? I don't think he even wrote anything himself, just liked stuff. And he did do this, like, Blue Lives Matter post, right? But if you actually read the post, he kind of explained how he had law enforcement in his family, like his brother was a cop, or his dad was a cop, or something like that, and he wanted to support them. And I do get that, so I would never post a Blue Lives Matter or an All Lives Matter, because I get, like, how it minimizes the Black Lives Matter thing and everything. So, and I get the racist connotations of it and how it's, like, sort of used to kind of, like, take away from Black Lives Matter. But for example, like, my stepdad, who's older, he is a retired police officer, and he posted, I don't know if he posted All Lives Matter or Blue, like, something like that during, like, all the tensions last year. And when he does it, and he's, like, literally, like, the nicest person ever, and he's not, like, racist or anything. And, like, I know that him posting it, it's, like, out of ignorance, because he doesn't get the whole thing of, like, why it takes away from Black Lives Matter. In his mind, he's just sort of, like, just a bit ignorant, and he's just thinking, well, I'm a cop and I'm a good guy, and I have, like, you know, friends that are cops, and, like, why are cops getting bashed on, so I'm gonna post All Lives Matter. It's not like he's, like, actively trying to take away from BLM. So I took Garrett speaking out about that kind of in that context of just, like, okay, you're a bit ignorant, and also you've got, like, police in your family, so you're sort of, like, sticking up for them specifically. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, he does that, and then Rachel went on the podcast and said in front of Becca, and Becca's engaged to Garrett, she goes, Garrett's a piece of shit. Like, she actually said that. I was like, what? It's like, okay, again, so Garrett's things that he likes on IG or whatever makes him a piece of shit. Claudia Oshry's tweets, not so much. Yes, I'm going to keep bringing that up, because big double standard there, Rachel. Got to hold yourself accountable, which you haven't done. So Rachel goes on to say that she's, like, livid and furious that, you know, they haven't done another black lead, which, I mean, to be fair, like, she does have a point. There was, like, quite a big gap between her and Matt James. So, like, I kind of get that part. But, you know, then she starts, like, threatening to disassociate herself from the franchise if they don't do better, which that part's funny to me. It's kind of entitled, like, you know, you don't do what I want and I won't be involved anymore. It's like, girl, you're, like, lucky to, like, get all the opportunities that you do. Like, there are so many Bachelor people that would, like, literally, like, kill their own grandmother to have the opportunities that you have within The Bachelor. But, okay. So then she writes, this is her quotes. Later that month, I got a courtesy call from an executive producer of The Bachelor. It was to let me know before it was announced that Matt James would be cast as the first Black Bachelor. I laughed. Mighty timely of you, I said. We were living in a world where corporations posted black squares, vowed to donate money, and aligned themselves with Black Lives Matter. What you really need to do is apologize, I continued. For 18 years, you've been part of the problem. And they did. They put out a statement acknowledging their role and vowing to do better. I was stunned. For the first time, I thought, wow, maybe change is coming. Okay, girl, so, like, you hounded them to get another black lead, which, again, fair enough, like, it was about time. But then they do that, and then you're, like, you're all pissed off that they did it. Like, oh, mighty timely of you. Like, girl, please, like, does everything have to be, like, an issue? Like, are you this difficult? Oh, shouldn't say that, guys. I'm going to get the Ebony Luan treatment now. You don't call white women difficult. I mean, literally, even though I do, but whatever. But, you know, she's always got a new demand. Like, it's always something. So... And Rachel forgets that she's the talent. Like, she doesn't produce the show. Like, she actually thinks she's Mike Flies. Like, she thinks that, like, whatever she says about, like, production or air or casting or anything, like, they have to do. And they did do a lot of what she said. So, I mean, whatever. So, you know, they make Matt James the Bachelor. And guess what, you guys? Rachel Lindsay's not happy about it. She didn't like it. Okay, this this is what she wrote next. Watching Matt's season felt like reliving my own. The focus was on his white mother and his popular white friends in the franchise. This man runs a non-profit. He's close with his family, but they gave us his whiteness. The end of the season centered on the absentee black father narrative, yet again playing into a stereotype. And then came Rachel Kirkconnell. You've got a contestant who you know is the winner at this point. You could have gotten ahead of the game by letting her make a statement, but true to the franchise, they thought this will blow over. I mean, a lot of people thought that would blow over because, like, it wasn't that bad. biggest overreaction in history, but let's not, like, redo that again. Matt James was close to his white mother. What do you want them to do? He was very close to his white mother. Like, they were, like, there was even, like, a viral thing because I think he was rubbing her leg or she was rubbing his leg. I can't remember what it was, but they had a very close relationship and his dad was absent. Like, that's just what happened. Like, do you want them to, I'm sorry that he's black and that she was white and that she was the better parent in that situation. I know that there's other situations where it's like would be flipped and the black parent is the good parent, the white parent's the shithead. This just happened to be Matt's situation and they depicted it on the show. Like, what did Rachel, like, did Rachel want them to just fake a family situation? Like, because, I mean, look, during her season, she said that they tried to show the interracial couples and she was pissed off with that because she said it's too contrived. And then she doesn't like that Matt James thing that they showed what actually happened with his parents. So it's either too contrived or it doesn't, like, what, girl, please. Like, you literally cannot do anything right by Rachel Lindsay. Like, nothing is good enough for her. Okay, so then she has a whinge about Chris Harrison again and then she attacks Bachelor viewers. Okay, this is another quote from her. The franchise has spent 19 years cultivating a toxic audience. They have constantly given it a product it wants, a Midwestern, Southern, white, blonde, light-eyed Christian. Not all viewers are like that. My higher learning co-host and I have divided it. There is Bachelor Nation and there is Bachelor Clan. Bachelor Clan is hateful, racist, misogynistic, xenophobic, and homophobic. They are afraid of change. They are afraid to be uncomfortable. They are afraid when they get called out. Well, you're afraid when you get called out too, because when you got called out over Claudia Oshry, you deleted Instagram and said, I'm getting death threats. Okay, so I guess you're afraid with the Bachelor clan. Go hang out with them. You can be afraid together. And yes, The Bachelor, like a lot of other shows, was very white and very Christian and like all of that. And now it's becoming more diverse, more and more with each season. So calm down. Like, they are trying. They've been trying since your season when you said, I want black producers. They did it. Like, you wanted a more diverse cast. They did it. And yes, then they failed a bit after that. And now they're, you know, trying to right the wrong. Like, maybe, yeah, it's probably just a reaction to, like, Black Lives Matter stuff. Like, of course, because I feel like on like a bigger level, you know, you have something like the Black Lives Matter movement, and then it's like, okay, like we're going to get, you know, all these big things like, you know, like police reform and stuff like that. And, you know, like the whole defund the police, which let's not get into that. But like, you think there's going to be like big changes like that. And then none of that happens. But then it's like, but we're making The Bachelor more diverse. Like, that's just the fucking stupid world we live in. And yeah, and okay. So then in this article, Rachel, oh, she whinges about her death threats. Okay. So she writes this. Some fans on social media started trying to dig up dirt on me. I received death threats and personal attacks. I had to hire people to protect me. Sorry, I don't mean to read it in that voice, but I couldn't even pretend to want to be involved anymore. I didn't want to give people a reason to talk about me because everything I was saying was becoming a headline, and so I decided to remove myself from it all. Okay, so yeah, she's mad people dug up bad things about her, even though she does that to other people, so that's very funny. Don't dig it up on me, but I'm going to do it to everyone else and use it for clout. And whining about death threats, which literally everyone in the public eye gets death threats thanks to social media, because, you know, with social media, we can all be anonymous and send horrible things to people, which is just a shame, but it's a downside of social media and being famous. I mean, what are you going to do? And she doesn't want anyone talking about her and wants to be removed from Bachelor, but she had to write a very long op-ed about it in Vulture and, like, promote it and everything. By the way, she complained about the Vulture headline as well. So when the Vulture headline first came out, I can't remember what the headline was, but she, like, wasn't happy with it. So, you know, again, like, it's always, always something. Like, it's never not anything with this Rachel. And then, you know, she finishes the piece by complaining about, like, the diversity stuff again and how she's, like, walking away from the franchise forever, except that if the price was right, she would return. Like, she kind of makes a joke about, you know, if there's, like, it's an eight figures, she'll be back. But I feel like she said the quiet part out loud, which is about, like, you know, it's really about money and business, I feel like. So, you know what? I'm happy that Rachel finally found the strength to leave. You know, she finally was able to walk away from The Bachelor after milking every last drop she could out of it for the last like 4 or 5 years. So I sincerely hope that she enjoys her book deal and the book is a bestseller. I hope she enjoys her hit podcast at The Ringer, the multiple TV shows she hosts. I mean, she has the MTV show, the Extra Correspondent, and, you know, she's got a million Instagram followers. She has a very, very hot husband that she's married to. I'm sure she has other things going on that we don't even know about, like other projects. Maybe she'll even end up on The View. Like, she'll be great on that. So good for you, Rachel. And as for The Bachelorette, we're actually about to get our third black female lead, which is exciting. We had the beautiful Tasia last year. I love me some Tasia. And you know what? I've actually got to make an apology. So on the first episode of The Bachelorette new season with Katie, I was like, Tasia and what's the other one's name? Tasia and Caitlin Bristow are like the worst hosts ever. They're going to be so bad. Just wait. I was wrong, although, look, okay, I was wrong, but also they've changed the hosting style. So the way that they were hosting the premiere when they were doing, like, they were, like, doing what Chris Harrison did, and then they were also doing these, like, stupid, like, comedy bits where they were, like, eating popcorn and stuff, and it was so dumb. But now the way that they're doing it, and they just have them more as, like, a friendly support system and stuff, it, like, it works really well. Like, I love it. And I kind of just feel like Tasia should be, like, the official, like, the new Chris Harrison. Like, Tasia's amazing. But anyway, so we had Tasia as a bachelorette last year, and then coming up we have Michelle, the nice teacher. So, yeah, that's later this year. So really exciting. We do have the more diversity and, you know, Tasia and Michelle, and I'm sure many other amazing, like, black contestants. And, you know, farewell, Rachel. Good luck to you, girl. All right, that's it for this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Sorry about all the ranting today. I actually didn't mean for it to be like this full on from like start to finish. It just, the topics aligned like that. I'll try and do a more lighthearted episode next week. Actually, there's an interview that I'm going to try and get next week, but whatever. We'll see if that happens. Make sure you're following me on social media at UnpopularJP on Twitter and Instagram. Of course, I reply to all of my messages. Also, Patreon, that is patreon.com/UnpopularJP. I am literally about to like record my Patreon episode now. Like, I'm just finishing this episode, then I'm going into the Patreon one. So that'll be out, in a few hours, very soon. So yeah, check that out. Thanks so much, guys, and I'll talk to you next week.